105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome again to the Biz Connect radio show. I'm here today with
Martin White.
Hello, Martin. And obviously, I'm Tracy Westall. And today we've got a really good packed show. We're going to bring you some national and local business news. We've also got two great guests, Alexandra Gordon from Brashers and Paul McCartney from eBusiness Coaching. But I think, first of all, what we'll do is we'll play a bit of music and we'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect,
the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. And as Tracy said, you're listening to the BizConnect radio show. And I think it's fair to say that once again, we've got a very, very busy week of business news coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tracy, why don't you kick us off by talking about the latest extension to the job support scheme that was announced last week by the Chancellor.
Yes, that's right. I mean, obviously, as we know, the furlough scheme is going to end at the end of October. Now, this job support scheme is to be expanded across businesses in the UK should they require their businesses to close due to coronavirus restrictions.
Mm.
Now, the government will pay two-thirds of employees' salary to protect the jobs over the coming months. And there is also this cash grant for businesses required to close during local lockdowns, and that has also been increased up to £3,000 per month. So there's a lot of different things going through, and I know that the government are making some further announcements later this week about various other things.
I think today, isn't it?
Yes.
3 o'clock today or 3:30 today, Boris will be in the House of Commons talking about their new lockdown strategy, mm-hmm. I think, which they're trying to sort of they're trying to create a localized version of that according to coronavirus hotspots, I believe.
Yes, and obviously we know that through listening to the news, it's been mainly up north, and they're having it a really rough time at the moment. And you know, they're trying to help as much as they can by all accounts, and we just, you know, from us southerners down here, we just hope them well, and get through all of this, because it's quite a trying time for a lot of businesses. There's a lot of things they're going to have to juggle. Obviously the government are trying to support eligible businesses by helping paying as two-thirds of each employee's salary, which is about 67%, but it's going to have a massive impact on all sectors, because obviously there's been a lot of information coming out from the leisure industry sector, restaurants, bars, clubs, and the like, but obviously, yes, they're at the fore, but there's also things like supply chains around them businesses as well. And it's going to be really interesting to find out exactly how government are going to support those industries, you know, the supply chain for those businesses going forward. So it's going to be very, very difficult, I think, over the next few months, without a doubt.
I mean, it's such a big sector, isn't it, I think?
Huge.
And I think they were saying that 25% of the drop in GDP that we saw under the lockdown quarter was directly through the reduced business in the hospitality trade. So, you know, it is a really, really important sector. And I think one of the key things, again, to note there is it's important for local business. You know, it's huge on a local level.
On a local level. And also there's been massive calls for the government to work with local councils, because obviously the local councils know their economy a lot better than a central government. And I think that these are where people are actually going to go to for the local government to try and get the support and the help they need to sustain themselves. Unfortunately, it's going to look like quite a few businesses may not be able to get through this one way or another. But it is really trying to keep as many businesses out there active and afloat, even if they have to close down for a while, to be able to bounce back within their communities and get the communities to support them, and obviously, you know, support your smaller businesses as well.
I mean, that may be the only practical option, I guess, for a lot of hospitality businesses. And the more interviews I see with owners of of you know, hospitality businesses on the TV, it's fair to say I think that they're all up in arms, because I'm not even sure that they're convinced that there is any scientific argument for targeting them, you know, wholesale as we seem to be, as the government seem to be doing at the moment. So I think it's a very hot potato.
Most definitely.
And you know, we'll wait to see what is announced in the House of Commons later on today. But your point about supply chain is absolutely right. You know, what about all the businesses that supply into
sector,
the hospitality sector? Are they getting any additional support if those businesses, you know, are forced to shut down? And at the moment, the answer is no, I think.
Yeah, I mean, what people realise is that the economy is based on the domino effect. Realistically, you need the supply chain to maintain your business, and if you're a business that luckily you don't have a huge supply chain, then you know there are other things where, you know, the government have been asked by the FSB that the Small Business Commissioner needs to really ensure that payment to small and medium-sized business suppliers are actually paid on time, because this is also a really crucial aspect of business at the moment. There's still a lot of overdue payments. People are not being paid on time. And, the financial impact on businesses, and this is not just from the help they're getting from the government, but it's also from, you know, being paid for the stuff and the services and the products and everything else that they supply. They also need to be paid, because they need that money to sustain their business, to keep on their employees.
Cash has to flow, doesn't it?
Cash has to flow. If cash stops flowing, then we're in a whole heap of trouble. And the thing is that there's a lot of financial stress and anxiety going on across this country and probably across the whole world at the moment, because there are individuals out there that are really, really struggling to try and maintain a business, trying to keep on to their employees employed. You know, they're really trying very, very hard, and money matters. Is one of the biggest things that triggers anxiety and stress. And I know for a fact that the Treasury last week announced the new rules on personal debt, consumer debt, where the new rules for debt letters to reduce stress and support mental health. This hasn't been updated for over 40 years, the way that people have chased people for money. Like businesses have chased people for money, whether that be your mobile phone bill or any loans or anything like that. And they're going to legislate on the changes of language, the presentation of these letters. And the real big thing out there is that if anyone that is listening, or you know of anyone that's having any financial trouble, please get them to seek help. It's really, really important. Finance is a major trigger for anxiety and stress and mental health issues, and obviously suicide, which is something that we really do want to prevent. So talking about it, getting help, it's really, really imperative. And I know that there's lots of people out there at the moment, whether it be personal financial issues, because maybe they've lost their job, they're back on furlough, they're going to be having to be put on this new job retention scheme, or you're trying to run a business and everything is falling apart at the seams. Please do seek help. Which sort of comes on nicely to a webinar that I've put together alongside the FSB and some other great speakers on finance and mental health. Now, that is going to be on the 21st of October at 10:30 in the morning till midday. Now, please join us on this webinar. There's going to be lots of supportive information. There's going to be guidance as well as advice. And also, we're going to sort of like try and tell you where you can go to get certain bits of help. So I will be putting it on my Pecunia LinkedIn, Facebook, everywhere else. I'll be on the Supply My Business as well. We're going to tweet it. The FSB will tweet it. It's free. You don't have to be a member of the FSB. So please do come along if you're really having some financial trouble, because it's something very close to my heart. And
I can tell you're very kind of passionate about it.
Most definitely. And I don't want people to be able to suffer, feel that they have to suffer in silence. There is many people out there that we can actually link up with you to help you through this.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Well, look, Tracy, I think what we'll do for the moment is we'll just leave that there. We'll come back after some music, and I think we'll just finish off on a couple of other points that have caught my eye, certainly over the last week or so, and some really a really positive initiative also from the FSB, in addition to the one that you've just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
which is the Kickstart program.
Yes.
For young people to get into employment, perhaps for the first time. So we'll play a bit of music, I think, and then we'll be straight back after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Welcome back, everybody. We were talking about what's going on in terms of extension of the job support scheme just before we played a bit of music for you there. Tracy, you mentioned a fabulous initiative, mental health focused
mm-hmm, yeah.
initiative, people that are perhaps having concerns about you know, money at the moment, and the importance of kind yeah. of talking to somebody and just kind of you know, a problem shared is a problem halved.
Most definitely.
And all of that. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to finish a little bit on what's going on with regard to hospitality at the moment, because it is a massive topic you know, nationwide at the moment. But I just want to flag up something that's that is going on, unfortunately, on the back of people having to sign into premises when they go for a drink or when they go for a meal, and that is what's actually happening with our data on the back of that sign-in procedure. And unfortunately, you know, as has been reported in the Times today, there are some very unscrupulous people out there who are now selling your data for marketing purposes. Now, you know, marketing is a nuisance, but unfortunately, you know, it there are other people that are using that data for identity theft, and
yep.
we're starting to see a huge rise now in fraudulent bounce back loan applications,
yes.
coronavirus business interruption loan scheme applications, and all of that obviously is being fed by you know, this huge availability of data all of a sudden out in the marketplace. So if you do have any concerns about your data having been stolen or misused in any way, shape or form, we do have the Information Commissioner's Office, which is a really good port of call there, and they are responsible for all things general data protection regulation
GDPR.
Related GDPR mm-hmm. related. So I would certainly contact them if you have any concerns there. I've noticed the banks are getting far more switched on in terms
yeah.
of, you know, checking that you're authorizing payments for mm-hmm. bona fide purposes.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, that's good to see. But also on a kind of individual level, if you're starting to get phone calls or spam messages perhaps on your mobile phone, you know, think about registering with the telephone preference service.
Yep.
To have your phone number excluded for marketing purposes, and also the mailing preference service.
Yeah.
If you're starting to get stuff, you know, through your letterbox that's really starting to kind of annoy you, you can also register with the mailing preference service. And both of those services, any reputable company engaged in any form of direct marketing is supposed to dedupe their mailing files, if you like.
Yeah.
Not dedupe, but to remove from their mailing files anybody that's actually registered on those databases. So there are some things you can do, but it's certainly something that I've noticed on a personal level, having visited a couple of pubs in the last couple of weeks. All of a sudden, you know, last week I was getting phone calls from Burnley and all sorts of places, and I'm thinking, well, I don't actually know anybody up there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you pick up the phone and it's the classic silent phone call, isn't it?
Oh,
you
know, I hate those.
You're on some kind
of your life.
Yeah, you're on some kind of automated machine, and
yeah.
you know, there's nobody on the other end, because it's you know, effectively, you know, it's a factory operation. So
yeah, very annoying, very
yeah. frustrating, but also potentially, you know, linking in with what you were saying, you know, very concerning on a kind of on a you know, on a finance level, on a kind of, you know, what's going on with
and
my
finance
money level.
Fraud is just on the increase, and we've not heard the last of this, to be honest with you, and it's a really bad thing to have to say, you know, bearing in mind how quick all these schemes and everything came about and how easy it was. Yes, it was a good thing at the time, but it was open to people just taking full advantage. You know, they could potentially be ruining other people's lives, which is just mounting and mounting, the numbers are mounting, and it's a really nasty thing to go through. So, you know, if anyone has any concerns, then please, please do seek help and advice and, you know, say go to the ICO.
Mm-hmm. And just be aware. Just be more aware. Mm. You know, you really do have to, you know, question every email, I think, now. You know, look at every time you're being asked to share your personal information, you know, is there a good reason for it? Mm. And yeah, just be aware. Just be aware of, of what's going on. But on a more positive note, you've got something you want to talk to us about.
Yeah, just briefly about the Kickstart, Scott. I can't even speak now.
Kickstart.
You
haven't
really
been on holiday, have you, in the last week?
Get the teeth in. Yeah, this is the new scheme that was announced quite a while ago in regards to trying to help those younger people to try and gain employment. This is a scheme where you can qualify for up to 6 months work placements if you're aged between 16 to 24 and claiming universal credit. And it's a really good initiative, I think, to give this age range you know, a view on what happens in working life and to try and sort of see where they really want to sort of get into. And the government will cover 100% of the employment costs for 25 hours a week. And it also includes just the salary at the appropriate minimum wage for their age, but also national insurance and pensions contributions. So it's quite a really good initiative. I know there's a lot of information out there on the internet about it. And you can actually go out and apply. It's so easy to apply. So if you're looking to bring somebody on into your business, give them a 6 month stint in your firm, try and show them the ropes, give them a bit of a kickstart in working life, because, you know, I think a lot of the youngsters, especially those that are leaving university or, you know, have left school, done their A levels, etc., they're finding it really hard at the moment. Obviously there's been a lot in the news about those that have been put in isolation at university, but there's a huge number of youngsters out there that are really, really keen to get out into the workplace, and this is a really, really hard time for everybody. And I think that, you know, if you can help with this Kickstart scheme, bring some youngsters in to the business,
should be good for your business as well.
Definitely.
You know, look at this as an opportunity to you know, perhaps your business is changing slightly, you know, and you need some help in a particular area. And if all goes well, you know, this might well lead to a permanent placement for someone.
Exactly.
But I mean, the reality is, you know, 100% of the salary for 25 hours a week will be paid for by the government. They'll be paying your national insurance contributions as well. And they'll also be picking up the employer automatic enrollment contributions. So it really is a no lose kind of scenario, I think, for the employer, isn't it? So,
and also you're giving somebody an opportunity for them to find their feet. You know, they've been through a lot. You know, a lot of these youngsters have really worked hard on their exams, and they've not been able to take their exams. There's been lots and lots of different things going on. You know, and this is an age range that actually does need a bit of support and a little bit of help. I know there's a huge amount going on in the world at the moment. We're trying to keep people in employment. But obviously, this is a new generation coming through, and some of them absolutely blow me out of the water, to be quite honest with you. Their ideas, their, you know, their imagination, their thoughts for the future are just astounding. So, you know,
and they deserve to be given a chance.
Everyone is deserving of a chance.
Mm. So it's a great scheme. There is a website. Yeah. The FSB are one of the Federation of Small Businesses are one of the key delivery partners here, in conjunction with Adecco.
That's right.
Massive recruitment firm. Mm. So if you go to fsb.org.uk/kickstart, you'll find all the information on that website, and you can actually register your business as being interested in taking on a young person as part of the Kickstart job placement scheme. Yeah. So fantastic. Good luck with that. Right, Tracy, I think what we'll do is we'll play a little bit more music.
Fabulous.
And then I know we've got our first guest, Paul McCartney.
Yep.
Very eager to talk to us, and we're really looking forward to having a chat with him.
Yes.
And we'll be back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect,
the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm delighted that we've got our first guest with us today. Tracy, tell us who's on the phone talking to us.
Yes, today we've got Paul McCartney from eBusiness Coaching. Good afternoon, Paul. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm very well, thank you.
Paul, brilliant to have you with us today. We were talking, Tracy and I were talking about some of the ongoing challenges of running a business at the moment, and some of the kind of job support schemes in terms of support that's out there on offer from the government. But just tell us a little bit about what you do in the context of helping businesses and helping business owners.
Okay, so I help businesses to work on the right things at the right time. It's the only way that you can move your business forward, and obviously whatever you're working on is going to be very much dependent on what's happening in the macro environment, so outside of your business, and really thinking about what the future might look like, which is difficult for most people at the moment, clearly.
What would you say are the main challenges for businesses, and where should their focus be at the moment, Paul? What are you seeing with your clients in terms of pain points?
Certainly planning forward is the biggest challenge, because if people don't know what the future holds, then it's very, very difficult to plan. And obviously, most times when we're planning forward, we don't know what the future holds, but there are always some things that we can use as a framework. Currently, that isn't possible because we don't know what's happening in relation to lockdowns, in relation to customer confidence, whether that be consumer or business to business. And I'm certainly finding that consumer confidence is slightly higher than business confidence at the moment. Businesses seem to be quite negative in some ways, and are not really thinking about how they can run their business moving forward, whether they need to pivot, whether they need to continue doing what they're doing, but in a slightly different way.
And do you think that some of that consumer confidence is as a result of a furlough scheme, for example, where people haven't necessarily felt the pain of a loss of income in the short term, and obviously that's all about to change? So do you see that kind of dynamic changing in terms of consumer spending and consumer confidence?
Well, I think it's a bit about furlough, but in the main, when you think about people in Kent where they work, many of us work in London. And so those guys that are now working from home, not furloughed, but working from home, they've still got their money coming into their bank account, but they're saving thousands of pounds a year on train fares, on commuting. Time-wise, they're much better off. So the confidence there, I think, is slightly higher. It remains to see what will happen once the job losses really start to happen, which I'm sure will happen in the last quarter of this year.
Mm. Yeah.
So in terms of businesses then, and that business confidence that you mentioned there, I guess one of the biggest challenges for businesses at the moment is in the whole area of business development. Opportunities to meet face to face, whether it might be business networking or just meeting potential customers are much more limited now, I think it's fair to say. So, what can businesses do to actually, create a strategy to acquire potential new customers? How should they be going about doing that, Paul?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Martin. The number of us small businesses who rely on networking to win new business and build new contacts is very large, especially in Kent. There's a lot of networking opportunities, some really good networking opportunities that we all try and get along to. That's been severely diminished by lockdown, and whilst there are a lot of online meetings happening, a lot of people that I talk to don't get the feeling that they get the same from it. So given that most people are now working from home, I think whatever you're doing on social media has got to be planned to the nth degree and really get a clear idea in your mind of the campaign that you want to run. Think about the key talking points of that campaign and make sure every single social media post that you get across talks about that. Email marketing too is important. I spoke to a lot of people right at the beginning of lockdown who wanted advice. They wanted free advice, and I was giving them that free advice and said to many of the people that I spoke to, make sure that you're talking to people on a regular basis. It doesn't have to be long newsletter type emails. It can be just clips of information that you want to share with your clients and your prospects. Key now, though, is getting that messaging right, ensuring that you really do sell the benefits that you can offer to your clients rather than the features of what you do.
And I know one of the big things that you always focus in on, Paul, is understanding your customer. And, you know, and you mentioned the word pivot in terms of, well, you know, that the business I had pre-lockdown or pre-coronavirus, is that the business, you know, that I should have now? Or is there another opportunity to take it in a slightly different direction? And that will mean understanding, you know, your potential customer base in that new, you know, pivoted kind of opportunity space, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. And it, whether you're continuing to focus on your existing customers or whether you're going to for a totally new segment, you need to understand them inside and out. And you know, in marketing, we use this great word of a marketing avatar, which is really just a profile of the target market that you want to reach. And if you know who your ideal client is, you should know them inside out. You should know what motivates them to buy from you. You should also know what their objections might be so that you can overcome those objections in any sales and marketing pieces that you do. But now it's very, very important to talk to those existing clients that you've got and ask them what they want from you. How have their needs and wants changed? Because invariably they will have done.
Tracy, did you want to?
Well, no, I mean,
so
I
you're
totally
busy scribbling notes there.
Well, no, I totally concur what Paul's been saying, because I mean, obviously, you know, to maintain your business, you need to do so many different things, and I hate that terminology, thinking out of the box. Sometimes you've got to think within the box that you've been put in, and I've always said, as Paul said, you know, marketing your business, keeping your name out there, keeping your brand out there, it doesn't have to cost you anything. And Paul's right, planning everything and making sure that, you know, you keep in touch. It's all about communication and conversation with the people around you that you've been dealing with, because, you know, everybody's in the same situation. We're all trying to get through this quagmire together in one shape or form. And, you know, we need to hold each other up.
You mentioned a really good point there, Paul. Is that something that you're seeing within the business community? Is there a sort of a bunker mentality, or are some businesses just kind of hunkering down, waiting for it all to kind of pass by?
There is in some businesses, and I would always encourage any business owner that I'm talking to not to do that, because if you hunker down and you try and let everything pass by, yes, everything will pass by, but you might not pass on with it. That's the issue.
Yes.
You need to be proactive. I've got a client I'm working with at the moment who is an arboriculturalist, which means he looks after trees on various landowner grounds, but also in terms of planning as well. And he has kept so positive throughout this whole period. And we've seen that he's seen a 15% upturn in his business over the last 3 months.
Fabulous.
It's good, interesting.
It's good,
you know,
advice.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. You know, it's people soon forget, don't they? If you're not on your customer's radar, then you know, they're not going to pick up the phone and call you ultimately, are they?
I was advised something very early on in my radio career by a guy who was an old hand in selling media. And he said that doing business without advertising is like winking at someone in the dark. You know you're doing it, but nobody else does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's so true.
Yeah. It is.
Good. All right. Well, I think what we're going to do now, Paul, if we can, is we're going to play a little bit of music, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about some of the new and exciting initiatives that are going on in your business at the moment, because I know you've got a couple of things in the pipeline that you want to tell people about. So we'll just play a little bit of music and we'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm here with the fabulous Tracy Westall.
Hello.
Tracy, lovely to have you back in the studio. And we've got Paul McCartney from eBusiness Coaching on the line. Paul, great to have you with us today.
Good to be back.
Before the break, Paul, we were talking about the challenge of business development at the moment for businesses and, you know, acquiring potential new customers, as well as obviously continuing to manage your existing customer base to the best of your abilities. I just wanted to get into, you know, some of the detail, if you like, behind business development and what that actually means on a kind of on a practical level in terms of the, you know, the amount of time required and the effort required, because it's not the easiest thing in the world to do, is it? I mean, invariably, you know, there are customers out there for your product or service, but getting to them and getting to the right person is not an easy thing to do, is it?
No, it's easier these days than it ever was, because clearly we have online opportunities that we can go for, and there's so much data out there now so that we can really get a handle on exactly who our target market is.
But on a kind of, Tracy, go on, you wanted to, did you
no,
want to say
no,
something?
No, I'm okay. Just listening.
You just looked at me. But on a kind of practical level, I mean, you know, Tracy runs her own credit management business, Pecunia. I run, you know, a couple of businesses myself. And in fact, I've launched a new business recently. And the thing that's kind of struck me as a new business is the amount of time that I have to spend dedicating to understanding my target market, identifying individual businesses, and then, you know, trying to identify the key contact within that business that I need to speak to. So it's a very kind of granular, very sort of detailed process, isn't it, Paul? It's not, you know, it's not something that just happens, you know, automatically by chance. It's something you have to really focus in on.
Definitely something you have to plan ahead with, and also get a good idea early on whether you're speaking to the right people.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I do when I'm working with a client is I will always encourage them to ensure that they have a very, very clear offering that they can put to their clients. And that offering has to be benefits-based.
Yeah.
So how is it best going to benefit the client? So getting the headline right is really important, especially in emails, and then the opening paragraph. You might have come across the old AIDA formula: attention, interest, desire, action, which many marketers and salespeople have followed through the years. It's no different today when we're looking at an email, for instance. That headline has to grab someone's attention. And if it can be constructed in such a way that you target that headline at the target market and give you a biggest benefit, they're going to want to read on.
No, it's a really good point. And tailor it according to, you know, that individual business. Think of it as a sort of a, you know, a job application, you know. And I think the kind of trap a lot of us fall into, you know, maybe in a past life when it was applying for jobs or, you know, when you're trying to attract new customers, is we kind of talk to everybody on the same level. As a, you know, rather than trying to kind of perhaps tailor an approach to a specific business. And I think the other thing that's, you know, lots of us are part of kind of professional online networks like LinkedIn, for example. And, you know, it never ceases to amaze me the number of people that ask to connect with you on LinkedIn. And then they just, they hit you with this kind of generic sales message immediately afterwards without any kind of understanding of, you know, whether or not you're actually in their target market and you know, whether or not you're actually interested in the products or services that they are representing. And, you know, so that's sort of bad practice, isn't it, Paul, really?
I've always been of the opinion that you should listen more than you speak, even when you're selling, because if you're doing that, you're listening out for your client's pain points. You need to understand what it is that they need or what it is that they want.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find out what they want, you're on a winner, because they're more likely to find the money for something they want rather than something they need.
Yes.
But you've still got to put the proposal together in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some terribly written B2B proposals that just talk about the client or talk about the person that's actually putting the proposal together rather than their potential client.
Yes, so talking about you rather than talking about your client, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, that's
no one's interested that, you know, your father started the business 50 years ago and that you've got so many staff and that you can do this and that you can do that.
Yeah.
What they're really interested in is what you can do for them.
How can you help me? Yeah.
It's getting rid of all that sort of dross.
Yeah.
Get to the real facts. What are you going to give me?
Yes, there are some quite scary stats around at the moment, which show that people are exposed to anything between 3,500 and 5,000 marketing messages every day.
Mm.
Yeah.
What you've got to do is cut through that clutter.
Yeah.
And really ensure that whatever you're hitting someone with, they're going to think, this is for me and I need to find out more about this.
Yeah. And as you say, you know, we have got the advantage today of all these wonderful new digital channels that we can kind of engage and talk to people through. But, you know, if the message isn't right and the approach isn't right, then, you know, it's not going to, result in any kind of benefit to you, is it, ultimately?
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right with what you said earlier on, Martin. You've got to listen to people. You've got to really find out what it is that they want and then tailor the approach to that particular person.
Because invariably most businesses have a range of benefits, but it's understanding which of those benefits are going to be key to that particular individual business, isn't it? And then just tailoring that communication accordingly.
I've got a bit of a rule of thumb that I use in that 90% of every message is going to be pretty much the same, pretty generic.
Yeah.
But 10% is going to be very, very specific to the client that I'm talking to.
Yeah.
And that's why when I see things come through in my inbox, and you just think, oh, here we go again. And I can get 3 or 4 emails from a particular place, and you just think, oh, here we go again. And it's all MailChimp.
Mm.
And you just know, because I've used MailChimp, it's not very personable or anything else like that.
Mm.
So when I've done it, I go, what do I want to receive?
Yes.
What's going to, you know, show them up, my email up, more than the ones that I keep getting on a daily or a weekly basis?
Well, MailChimp, I think, you know, has its role to play. I mean, Paul was talking about, you know, newsletters and the importance of keeping customers up to date with what's going on. And MailChimp, you know, is a great delivery vehicle for that. But if you're sending out, you know, blanket emails to potential customers through a program like MailChimp, you know, what does that say to you?
Exactly.
So, crikey, you know, what number am I on the list, you know?
You're absolutely right, Martin. And there's so much opportunity now in relation to automating marketing. One of the things that I'm doing with 3 or 4 of my clients at the moment is we've created landing pages on their websites where we're giving away a free white paper, a free download.
Yes.
People come onto their website, they download whatever it is that they're there to do in return for their email address and their contact details.
Yes.
What then happens is there's a program called Active Campaigns, which runs behind the website, and it follows up with a number of emails over a 6 to 8 week period. But very, very relevant emails to what it is that the client has downloaded the document for.
Mm.
And it's a much nicer way of keeping in touch with people.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, it's all got to be relevant. And I think that's the thing that's really bugged me.
Yeah. Well, do your research, understand your customers, do your research, create the strongest possible value proposition that you can, knowing, you know, what their needs are. And then by all means, you know, make use of digital media and those channels to communicate that message. But, you know, the point for me is, you know, there are no shortcuts. It is time consuming. But, you know, would you rather have a sort of a 1 in 100 strike rate Or would you rather have a sort of 1 in 10 strike rate, you know? Mm. And that for me is the key.
Yeah.
So, Paul, I just want to move on quickly because I know you've got another very exciting initiative coming up, something called Business Made Simple. Just tell us a little bit about that, if you can.
That's right, yeah. Well, some of your listeners will know about StoryBrand because I know we've got a couple of StoryBrand guides in the county, and I've been coaching two of them since the beginning of this year. And I was made aware in the summer of Donald Miller, who's the guy that wrote StoryBrand, coming up with a new online portal called Business Made Simple. It's a university where people can go online and they can have a look at a number of courses from a mission statement, putting a mission statement together, right the way through to leadership skills and understanding people's personalities. Donald Miller then announced late on in the summer that he was going to be recruiting coaches across the world to actually take this Business Made Simple idea out to the world. And I've been lucky enough to secure a place on the inaugural course, which happens next week. Should have been in Nashville, but it's going to be in Maidstone, unfortunately, via Zoom because of the current epidemic. But this is a fantastic opportunity for me and my clients because it means that not only do they get me for the coaching sessions that we work on every month or every fortnight, depending on how they're using me, but they've also got all of this support in between in the form of workbooks and videos and various other content on the businessmadesimple.com platform.
Brilliant.
So it's a very exciting step forward for me, but more importantly, it's exciting for my clients because they're going to get that much more support from me.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, we wish you all the best with that, Paul.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
We do need to say goodbye, unfortunately. We have run out of time, but please, can you give us a shout-out for how people can get in touch with you? And also, tell us a little bit about the discovery session, the free discovery session that you offer through your website.
Certainly, yeah. If you go to my website, which is ebusinesscoaching.co.uk, there is a free download on there which shows you how you can eat an elephant one bite at a time. You know, we've all got these big tasks that we have to accomplish.
Yeah.
And very often it's just a case of sitting down and thinking about how you're going to accomplish that one bite at a time. Through my website, you can also book a discovery session with me as well. And a discovery session isn't something where you're going to be sold to. It's an hour of my time where we can sit and discuss any concerns that you have within your business, any opportunities that you think you might have in your business, and how you might best move forward towards the business that you want. Mm. Let's not forget, we all work to live. We don't live to work. Mm. So it's important that you have the life that you want from your business. And to do that, you need the business to do what you need it to do to give you that life.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Absolutely. Paul, it's been fantastic to have you on today. And hopefully we've given people some pointers in terms of the types of things they need to be thinking about, whether it's on a business development angle or, you know, looking after existing customers, the types of things that business owners should be thinking about at the moment. So it's been brilliant to have you on. Really appreciate that.
Been great being on. Thank you both for having me.
Great.
Thank you.
And we'll catch up with you again soon, hopefully.
Great stuff. Talk to you soon.
Thanks,
bye,
Paul.
Now.
Cheerio.
Bye.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Biz Connect Radio. And we're here with our final guest of the day, Alexandra Gordon. Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, welcome to the show. Obviously, you work at Braces. You're a partner there. And you do private clients.
That's correct. So, Braces, for those who don't know, it's a law firm based in Maidstone, and we've most recently opened an office in Canterbury. We're also celebrating our 125th birthday this year, so a very exciting year for us.
Happy birthday.
You haven't been there for all of that time, though, have you, Alex?
No, I mean, it looks like I might have been, but I haven't.
Feels like it at times, I'm sure.
Lockdown wasn't kind.
So, talking of lockdown, what did you get up to? Because I understand that you were classified as somebody that had to work during that period.
Yeah, so we deal with a lot of wills, and wills fell within the responsibilities of key workers. So we were allowed to go into the office and we were allowed to see clients if necessary to sign their wills. We're quite lucky in Maidstone and also in Canterbury. We've got very big, large meeting rooms. We've got screens up. So it made it a lot easier to get wills witnessed. Wills have to have two witnesses, and during COVID, that was very difficult for people to sort. So we were able to see clients socially distanced, masks, gloves. Everyone had different pens, sat very far away from each other, making sure that the wills were witnessed properly.
So you managed to carry on, I mean, we had Alex Baker on a couple of weeks ago from Burgess Hodgson, and we were talking about the challenges of, coming back to work. Well, first of all, being, being told to work from home if you can, and then being told to come back to work, and now being told to work from home again if you can. Has it been a similar kind of process at Braces in terms of people in, out? In-out sort of thing, or how have you guys managed that?
Yes, it has been similar. I think our team, because of the wills, we've always had a few people in the building, and a few people couldn't work from home, so we've always had enough people there to deal with clients and post and things during COVID. But we've been doing a lot more virtually as well. So we've been doing will meetings, not the signings, online. And we've also extended our office hours for virtual meetings from 7 o'clock in the morning to, I think it's 9 o'clock in the evening, and also Saturday mornings. Just because at the beginning we had quite a lot of doctors who wanted to get their wills and their estate planning up to date, due to the situation they were finding themselves in. So we had to make sure that we were flexible to see the clients.
I hadn't even thought of that, because you are a private client solicitor. So, I mean, that's quite kind of wide-ranging, isn't it, in terms of the areas that you cover off. I mean, you've mentioned wills, but tell us about some of the other work that you get involved with, Alex.
So, mainly for me, I specialise in inheritance tax planning and estate planning.
Right.
I also deal with the creation of trusts. Wills tends to slot into your estate planning work, but I also cover lasting powers of attorney, and then also deal with an estate when someone passes away. So it's quite wide. But within our team, we go wider. We have a separate trust team who just deal with the running of trusts, and we have a separate vulnerable to client team who deal with the affairs of people when they've lost capacity. So setting up wills for them through the court, or setting up what's called a deputyship order, which is like a power of attorney for those who don't have capacity.
It's quite interesting, because over the weekend and last week, we had a long discussion with some friends of mine about lasting powers of attorney and how important they are, actually, for people to have put in place.
Definitely. I think people are realising they're probably more important now than your will, because they actually come into effect whilst you're still here. So it just allows someone you trust to deal with all of your decisions for you. Also as well, we look at them like they're an insurance policy. You put them in place and you hope you never need them.
Yes.
But if you do, they are there ready. So it's hard to tell, because not everyone loses capacity, obviously. It's hard to tell if you're going to need them, but peace of mind, we recommend everyone put them in place.
It's a difficult conversation, though, isn't it? Because I've just gone through this with my parents fairly recently, and it wasn't something that I necessarily felt comfortable bringing up. And in the end, actually, it was sort of a kind of a 50-50 scenario, where, you know, they kind of started the conversation and I'd done some research, so I was able to kind of offer some insight there as well, because, it's not an easy thing to talk about, is it? You know, when you're talking, you know, within families, when you're talking about, you know, what happens to assets and what happens to, you know, control of financial things, it's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, very difficult. But it does mean that someone can deal with their finances. We always make sure we advise clients on what the alternative is if they don't have them in place, and it is just best avoided. And especially when it comes to wills as well, I think people think that if they make a will, they're almost tempting fate and something's going to happen to them.
Yeah.
because we've still got about 50 to 60% of the adult population in this country who haven't got a will in place.
It is sort of like an unparked conversation of, have you done a will? And, you know, we should talk about lasting power of attorney. And I know that it's a very difficult subject, but it's just so important. So important.
Because I guess otherwise, Alex, it all goes to the state. If you haven't made provision, the state will take it. Is that right?
The intestacy provisions are quite complicated. We always say to people, if you don't know what they are, why have you chosen them to deal with your estate? So when it comes to married couples, not everything will necessarily pass to the surviving spouse. If you've got cohabitees, nothing. So if you're not married and not in a civil partnership, nothing at all passes. And if the children are the ones who are going to inherit under the intestacy provisions, then they inherit at 18, which most people think is quite young. So we've just been trying to, I suppose, especially during the last 6 months, make the process slightly easier for people. We've developed an online questionnaire now where we can send clients out a link and they can complete the details we need from them in their own time, so that when we do meet with them, whether it be in person or virtually, we've already got the background. So it saves them time telling us everything in a meeting, because everyone's busy at the moment, aren't they? So we just try to make it as easy as possible for them.
And they've had a chance to think about some of those key questions as well before you meet them, rather than kind of putting them on the spot there and then, I guess.
Exactly.
No, brilliant. Now, you've also recently qualified as a notary public.
That's correct. So I'm just waiting to be sworn in. It's quite a complicated process. Once you finish your exams, the faculty office have to approve you and the SRA have to confirm that you are a solicitor, practicing solicitor. So I'm at the stage where I'm waiting for an oath to be sent to me, I believe, which I have to swear in front of a vicar. Not literally swear, but swear on the Bible.
Right.
In front of a vicar.
Gosh, it's still done that way.
And then once that's done, I pay them a lot of money, and then I am ready to go.
Ready to go.
So just tell us, what does a notary public do, or is able to do, that a solicitor can't?
So a notary will deal with the authentication of documents for use overseas. So the term notary is recognised everywhere in the world, whereas solicitor, not so much. And a notary carries a lot more weight to it, so it will be accepted everywhere. So the notary's job is to confirm that the contents of the document are true. So we don't really have a client. We're just, our purpose is to make sure the document is true, not to see what the client says necessarily, but make sure everything is correct, because wherever it could go to in the world, they are relying on it as completely accurate.
So would that come into play, for example, if I was buying property overseas? So for things like land searches and stuff like that, would you be engaged to validate some of that documentation?
Yeah, and it's normally, from what I can tell from Lindsay, who you've met, a lot of it is power of attorney work, so that you give power of attorney to someone in the country where the property is for them to deal with the signatures.
Right, okay. Brilliant, good.
So it sounds quite exciting, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does, yeah. Now, I'm going to take you back to another responsibility that I know you had some time ago, but I'm not sure you're responsible for it now, and that is the handling of lottery winners, because I know you... I mean, I always aspired to meet you in the context of having by the way, I've just won £75 million on the Euro Millions. Can you get my money for me? So just tell me a little bit about how that worked and what your kind of role was there.
So we were on the panel, on the Camelot panel of advisors, and Camelot, for anyone who won over £1 million, Camelot put together a meeting completely free to the client of a lawyer, an independent financial advisor, and then a representative from Camelot. And basically, it was just to make sure that they, after receiving a win, which can be life-changing for most people, they had some independent advice as to the next steps. So my role would be to, first of all, advise them on inheritance tax, because most of the people who did win didn't have substantial amounts of money before, so it immediately meant that their estates were taxable if they were to pass away. And then just making sure they had a will in place, because obviously a lot more assets to pass, And again, then lasting powers of attorney for someone to be put in place to deal with their finances should anything happen to them.
Wow, how exciting. Wow. So just tell us, what was the biggest win you were ever involved with?
Oh, there was a few I was involved with. I think it was around 30-odd million.
Wow.
Going back a few years, though.
How exciting. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, the biggest win that I remember from a scratch card was £5 million, though.
Wow.
At the time, I thought, that's ridiculous, winning that amount of money on a scratch card. And start buying them.
Yeah. Well,
could you imagine buying one of them in your supermarket and then scratching it off there and then going...
Can you believe it?
Yeah. I'm always a bit heavy-handed with those, and I tend to scratch a bit hard and scratch out the thing underneath, you know, so that would be just horrendous, wouldn't it? Anyway, Alex, lovely. Look, what we're going to do now is we're going to play a little bit more music, and then we're going to come and talk to you again about some of the other initiatives, like the Kent Law Society, for example. You run a successful online networking group as well. We're going to talk about some of those other things that you're involved with. So bear with us, stay on the line, and we'll be back shortly after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We've got the fabulous Alexandra Gordon from Bracious Solicitors with us today. Alex, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. We've been talking about some of the detailed work that you get involved with as a solicitor, from everything from kind of trust planning, inheritance planning, powers of attorney, notary public, a huge kind of wide-ranging area of subjects and legal subjects that you get involved with. But I think it's fair to say that you're not your typical solicitor. I mean, my experience of working with solicitors is fairly limited. I think the last time I saw a solicitor was about 10 years ago when I had a sort of an employment question, and I was ushered into a sort of a darkened room with incredibly sort of dark, heavy drapes and a big sort of oak desk and a solicitor sitting behind it. But that's not really the kind of the picture, I think, that you paint at Bracious. You're quite a modern firm, aren't you?
Very modern. And especially in our team, we're actually quite a young team. So we've got some really young, incredible lawyers in the team. But we're quite lucky we balance it. We've got some people who've been at the firm for 30 years in our team, so we balance quite well.
Yeah.
We get a mix of new and old.
Yeah, fabulous. And I guess like most people, it's important to have something outside of the day job, albeit related perhaps sometimes, that you can kind of focus on as well. And I know that you're about to become president of the Kent Law Society in Kent, is that right?
That is correct. So on Friday we have our AGM where I'll become president. It was meant to be in May, so normally we have our AGM followed by a dinner of approximately 300 lawyers and judges across Kent, and we have a big celebration. This year, obviously, it's been cancelled.
Oh.
Not so upset. So we've got the AGM on Friday, mm-hmm. and I will be in my post for 18 months as opposed to 12, just to give more time to try and deal with some of the events I wanted to put on, and hopefully we might get a dinner, if not next year, then the year after.
So just tell us, what is the Kent Law Society? What is the work that you do? What is the kind of the purpose behind it?
Okay, so we exist to support lawyers, trainee lawyers, staff in law firms and students in Kent, and we offer training, help with recruitment, guidance. We deal with consultations on behalf of Kent, which go to the local law society. And pre-COVID, we were putting on face-to-face networking events, some just for lawyers, and then some cross-networking events to encourage different professions to come together.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Sounds wonderful. So it's a sort of an organisation that's there to sort of primarily help young, upcoming, legal professionals.
Yeah, the work we do is quite varied as well. I mean, during lockdown, we've actually had quite a busy period. So we've had one of our committee members have the idea of putting on a wellbeing series.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is that quite a lot of junior lawyers were furloughed.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to give them something 9 a.m. on a Monday morning to get them up for the week and keep them positive and also teach them some soft skills. So that ran for, I think, probably nearly 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of well-being sessions, whether it be psychological, physical, financial, and then lots of soft skills sessions as well, just to try and keep them engaged.
Mm.
Mm. No, I like the sound of that. It's at the moment, it's very much a sort of support network for people as well, which is great.
Definitely, definitely. I think like all professions, lawyers struggle, especially junior lawyers, with their mental health.
Mm.
There was a survey done last year by the actual Law Society, their junior lawyer division, and the results are just awful. So 60% of junior lawyers, their mental health had negatively impacted on their physical health, and 14% had suicidal thoughts.
Mm.
So I know we're not alone in that. I know, especially you speaking to Charlie, construction's another one of those professions that really struggle, but just to try and do something to help.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Good. And I know you normally you'd be putting on a lot of social functions as well, I guess.
Yeah, so normally we manage to get quite a few done, and some that raise money for charity, so that's going to be our next challenge. But we've got one we're going to advertise today, actually. It's going to be the beginning of November.
Right.
It's a cross-networking event, and it's going to be virtual baking.
Ah.
A lady who runs her own baking business, and she's going to deliver out boxes of ingredients. Uh-huh. And we're all going to join a Zoom call and learn how to cook.
Right.
Because you've done another one of them. You've done a few of these, actually, to be quite honest with you, Alexandra. Haven't you?
Yes, normally we see you on a Friday night, I think it is, on LinkedIn, and you're all making cocktails. Is that right?
That's correct. We will get an invite soon, but unfortunately, I seem to have publicised her so much I can't get any more slots.
Okay. I must ask you, do you give people a list of ingredients that they need to have to hand before the cocktail making masterclass takes place? Or do you just expect people to have a huge drinks cabinet that they can kind of call on to mix things up off the hoof sort of thing?
No, so Laura at Wildbox is fantastic. Oh. She delivers the boxes on the day, and they've got absolutely everything you need in there.
Oh, wow.
All of the spirits are Kent based.
Uh-huh.
All of the fruit is locally sourced.
Wow.
Everything in there you get is, you just need a shaker and some ice.
That is,
and she
brilliant.
Provides the rest.
Wow.
Fabulous.
How much fun. Good.
I know.
Good,
I might do that for my birthday.
Yeah.
Because we could be locked in.
Now, we mentioned social media because, and we were talking to Paul before about social media and the power of social media, you know, if it's used in a kind of targeted and the right way. You're incredibly active on social media, I know, and you've recently started an online networking group as well, as if you didn't have enough to do during the day. Every other week, you also run an online networking group. So tell us a little bit about how that works and how people can get involved with that if they're a business, for example.
So this started right at the beginning of lockdown, and I actually probably didn't have enough hours in the day to do my day job just because of wills and everyone needing them. But I really missed speaking to people because before COVID, I would be at networking events probably 3 times a week. Uh-huh. So I thought I'd set something up and see if it took off. And I've had the pleasure of both of you joining me on it.
Mm.
But every week through lockdown, and now every other week, we have a virtual networking event over Zoom. It's open to everyone. And we just basically, I think through COVID, we kept each other going, really.
Yeah.
Quite nice to hear the changes in furlough from the accountants and the lawyers and just hear what was going on in the industry. Mm. But it was also quite nice to see a friendly face and just be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. It was good, and I really enjoyed it, and it was nice to sort of, like, have that interruption in the day just to have a, you know, a good hour of a chit-chat with a load of people, and we could talk about some random stuff.
But at the same time, it was also really informative,
it is really informative,
because, I mean, it's not like it's stopped, but it's not weekly anymore, it's bi-weekly, I think, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but no, I mean, it was a nice way to kind of share, or has been a nice way to share information, topical stuff that's going on. I mean, I remember on one session, I learnt the importance of writing or signing your name in black ink, Alex, rather than blue ink.
Yes.
You did.
So, you know, little things like that.
Little golden nuggets.
Little gems. Yes. Yeah, fabulous. So, so if I am a business owner and I'd like to kind of join in, because it sounds like fun, as well as being informative, what's the best way to kind of get involved with the Herd community, I think you've christened it? How do we get in touch and kind of register for it?
Just drop me an email. So, alexandragordon@braces.co.uk.
Brilliant.
Or if you put my name in and Braces on Google, it will find me with my email address.
Fantastic.
Or drop me a message on LinkedIn and I'll get you on the mailing list.
Brilliant. Fabulous. And that's it's a bi-weekly Zoom meeting, isn't it? And I think, what time is it normally?
It's Wednesdays 1 till 2.
Wednesdays 1 till 2. Good. All right. So we'll keep a lookout for that as well. Fabulous. Well, Alex, I think we've kind of come to the end of our time, unfortunately. Just give us a shout out for how people can get in touch with you, you know, whether it be on social media or, you know, directly through Braces, if they've got any burning questions that they'd like to kind of put to you. And do you offer an initial conversation with people, you know, if they have got something that they want to discuss that they're not quite sure about, you know, how does the process kind of kickstart? Can we get in touch and have that initial conversation free of charge, if you like, in order to understand how we need to move forward?
Yes, of course. So on our website, we are currently, you can book, I think it's 15-minute slots, mm-hmm. To have a chat with someone, one of our lawyers, about certain areas of private client work. That's completely free.
Brilliant.
We're just trying to give people as much advice as we can to work out whether they need our help or not.
Because sometimes you just don't know where to start, do you? You need to have an initial conversation to know what you then need to do. So you offer that.
Well, we've mm-hmm. been...
No, you carry on.
We've been, since lockdown, COVID, we've also been running some videos every Friday called Fact Friday. So my colleague, Michael Cressy, he does a video every week and he's just trying to answer any questions that people may have on certain topics. So we've covered wills, powers of attorney, probate. We're now about to move over to tax. So just giving people snippets of information which hopefully helps them without boring them about the wonderful world of tax.
And is all of that available on your website as well to kind of to view afterwards as a download? Or
yes, all available on the website.
Fantastic.
Or on our LinkedIn. And all of the contact details are on both as well.
Okay. So there's quite a lot of resource there that people can just access, as well as booking an initial kind of consultation free of charge as well, which is brilliant.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Good. Alex, look, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been fascinating talking to you and understanding more about what you do at Braces. Been lovely to have you with us.
Yes.
And
thank you.
We're going to let you go because I know you're incredibly busy, but Tracy and I will look forward to catching up with you
at
the next Herd Community Networking, which I guess is going to be next week now, isn't it? So
that's right, next Wednesday.
Brilliant. Yeah. So we'll catch up with you then. But for now, Alexandra Gordon from Braces Solicitors, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you both. See you soon.
Thanks, Alex. Bye.
Bye.
105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect. Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world. Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today for another BizConnect. We will be back in 2 weeks' time on the 26th of October. But I guess our sort of parting advice today would be, if you have any burning questions relating to your business at the moment, if you need some help, if you need some advice, we had some fabulous guests on today in the form of Paul McCartney from eBusiness Coaching. Paul's always happy to have a conversation with business owners about the direction of their business. We had Alexandra Gordon on from Braces Solicitors. And likewise, Alex is always happy to have that conversation with people initially free of charge. So, as I say, do put your hand up, do ask for advice. There's plenty on offer out there at the moment, and stay safe. And we'll see you again in another 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.